Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. The National Low Income Housing Coalition reports that just 36 affordable and available rental homes exist for every 100 extremely low-income renter households in the country. That shortage is echoed across Ohio as well. Some developers are concerned that a new Ohio law could exacerbate the challenges to affordable housing. Coming up, we'll take a look at a couple of efforts to address the affordable housing shortage in Central Ohio. Catherine Cawthon is the president and CEO of the Ohio Capital Corporation for Housing. That's a nonprofit that provides access to capital for affordable housing developers. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you, Ann, for having me, and good morning.
So this capital question is the bottom line here for developers. They need to make a living. Affordable housing doesn't generate a big margin of profit.
Exactly. So we have to provide a landscape and an environment to encourage developers and the investors to bring money into Ohio.
House Bill 45 was passed during the lame duck session at the 11th hour. It makes a couple of changes that could impact affordable housing development. One provision prevents a project from receiving both low-income housing tax credits and Ohio historic tax credits. What's the significance of that?
So the Ohio State Historic Tax Credit has been a very successful program, and it's modeled off of a federal historic tax credit program that brings additional capital to a project that is trying to restore and regenerate and put into an adaptive reuse of a historic building. And as you know, in Ohio, we have significant amount of historic buildings in our neighborhoods. And so this has been a wonderful tool, and it will continue to be a wonderful tool for historic buildings. The problem with what was put into HB 45 is now the state historic tax credit is not allowed to be paired with a program called the low-income housing tax credit, which is the federal program. The pairing of those or twinning of these two programs together provided the capital, much needed capital, to get these buildings back into use and used for the affordable housing projects that we see around the state. And, you know, the loss of this for this type of housing can be significant. It's just another way of trying to bring capital away from affordable housing in Ohio.
Do we understand who the stakeholders are that were behind this 11th hour change during the lame duck session?
You know, it's my understanding that there were legislators here in Ohio that were specifically concerned with utilizing a lot of the state's assets or their programs for affordable housing, and that it could be construed that using a couple different programs, it was providing more and more dollars that was going into the pockets of developers. When in reality, to encourage developers to focus on affordable housing, they are compensated through a developer fee, et cetera. There's no other way to really encourage somebody, whether it's a for-profit or a nonprofit developer, to be aggressive and to be working with us on the affordable housing problem. So it's my understanding it's, you know, another way to kind of move resources away from that.
And this is especially relevant in older and built out cities, right?
Absolutely. You see a lot of this development in Columbus, Cleveland. Dayton had some significant buildings renovated that's affordable housing, and as well as, of course, Cincinnati.
Right, which it's a linchpin in Cincinnati.
Exactly. It does not touch as much in our rural areas just because of the rules of it, placing a building on the historic preservation listing. But yeah, it does really put, kind of kicks you in the side, right? It's just another knock against affordable housing.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News, and we're talking about the extreme dearth of affordable housing in the United States and in Ohio. Ohio has got a big problem, and it's only going to, the challenges will only be exacerbated really by the influx of population to work at places like Intel and whatnot. We're expecting a big population increase in Columbus over the next 10 to 15 years. The housing construction levels, from what I understand, are half what they need to be to achieve the goals.
Exactly.
Why is affordable housing not as profitable to build? Why? So is it a board for board, linear foot of flooring for linear foot of flooring issue, or is it something else?
So, you know, the whole concept behind the low-income housing tax credit specifically is, you know, being able to have a public-private partnership, bring capital and equity to a project that will be specifically utilized by our low and moderate income folks. And people think, oh, low and moderate income folks, who are these folks? You know, a lot of times for affordable housing, it is the folks that are working in our schools. They're the folks that are some first responders working in our offices day to day. So it's a lot, it goes more deep into our workforce than people really, really understand. But by providing these tax credits and having private companies buy these tax credits, it allows for the development to restrict rents so that the rent doesn't get out of control and somebody can afford it. It won't go over typically 30% of their income. That way, our low and moderate income residents can afford things like food, medicine, and other things that they should be focusing on, and not just how are they going to keep a roof over their head.
And the role of developers in this is, when they get these tax credits, they don't have to charge as much for rent.
Exactly. So you don't have, like you would in a market rate multifamily housing development, you don't have this cash flow flowing off of it every month. That is how a lot of developers of market rate are compensated. So for in a capital, a financial structure of a low-income housing, you know, you're going to have a developer that will earn a developer fee depending on the size of the project and everything. Now, these developers are risking a lot because they are actually risking their own balance sheet, their own assets, to promising that this project will be built, constructed as agreed, leased up, and stay leased up through the life of the compliance period. So the compliance period is 15 years. We want to make sure these facilities, these projects and communities, they stay affordable for the long term.
The law, House Bill 45, which passed again during the lame duck session, had another provision in it. It allows auditors, county auditors, to assess affordable housing developments as if they're operating at market rate pricing, meaning they assess the value of it based on what they could get for rent, not what they actually charge for rent, a la the low-income housing tax credit.
Exactly. You know, they were the wording in HB 45 says that they are allowed to pick their approach to determine the value of a property, whether that's the market data approach, income approach, and or cost approach. And it's really a confusing way to word it.
Well, and then so they assess it as if people are paying quote unquote market rates for rent, but they're not. And then the taxes that are owed on it are affected by that. And then it's push comes to shove, right?
Exactly. And, you know, as these are projected out when we first develop a property, they're thin as it is, you know, and then you layer this on, there's over 140,000 units in Ohio that could be affected as soon as this is put into place, which would be effective really with 2024. But it's going to cause a lot of issues. And then you layer on the fact that utility costs are going up, staffing expenses going up. It's going to be a triple whammy.
Why? What was the thought in that provision? What's the logic there?
Yeah, there is always a concern that an affordable housing project is not paying as much property tax as they should. So folks feel like the school system or other, fire, police, they're not getting their due, and that it puts a burden on those systems in a county, in a town. What's interesting is that we have been working on kind of a compromise and a solution so that we can ensure that those type of services are not harmed by an affordable housing property. And that's what we actually were in conversations about, trying to get them to understand and trying to work together. And unfortunately, or fortunately, a lot of the larger cities get this. They understand the need for this affordable housing. It is really going to hurt disproportionately the rural communities, the rural counties that don't really have an understanding or a robust community development community and support through the cities to understand how they should be taxed.
What's the argument? So people are saying they don't pay their fair share of property taxes. They're not helping pay for the fire, the police, the schools. What's the argument for why this affordable housing stock, how does it countervail that? What's the argument against that, and why it's more important to have that affordable housing and take, for a community?
Absolutely. And you'll see, and as we discuss today, a little bit more of what's going on in certain areas, folks are really challenged by the fact that they have this vision, this understanding of who lives in these affordable housing projects and developments. And it's really it's a lack of understanding. And it also is a little bit of, NIMBYism. Not in my backyard. This is okay. We can have this kind of housing, just not in my town, just not in my county. And we have been fighting that for for decades. And I don't expect that to go away. But what I hope is that people will be open-minded enough to educate themselves on who actually lives in these projects and facilities and communities, and how they add to the community vibrancy of our areas, and that they actually add to, our workforce. They add to our, dynamics of our communities and our schools. I just think it's really education that needs to occur.
So the stakeholders in this issue of assessing the value of these properties, who wanted this?
It's a lot of legislators that believe they want to bring back more dollars into their communities. The county auditors, they're responsible for bringing in and making sure that they are getting as much tax revenue for their county as possible. And here's one more way to kind of,
It's like
try to support.
it feels like the left arm is doesn't know what the right arm's doing.
Exactly. In my opinion, I agree. Now, the interesting thing about this real estate tax valuation issue is that back in 2009, back we were arguing about the very same thing. The Ohio Supreme Court already has ruled that the income approach was to be used and that any other method would be unconstitutional here in Ohio. So at the very least, this language that was included in HB 45 is just going to cause a lot of confusion. It's going to be try to be forced on properties. You're going to see properties that are already tight in operating budgets suffer But you're also going to see most likely folks pushing back through, whether it's lawsuits or whatever, because the Ohio Supreme Court has already ruled on this.
That's Catherine Coffin. She's president and CEO of the Ohio Capital Corporation for Housing. That's a nonprofit that connects affordable housing developers with investors and lenders. We're going to talk more about what they do coming up. We're also going to talk about strategies in different communities, how they're managing it, including in Worthington, where they're mulling plans to ask voters to approve a $1.1 million affordable housing bond issue in November. We're going to talk about that coming up. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Dan Fisher. The National Low Income Housing Coalition reports that just 36 affordable and available rental homes exist for every 100 extremely low income renter households in the country. That shortage is echoed across Ohio as well. We're going to highlight a couple of efforts in Central Ohio to address the problems. Still with us is Catherine Coffin. She's president and CEO of the Ohio Capital Corporation for Housing. The Worthington City Council is mulling plans to ask voters to approve a $1.1 million affordable housing bond issue in November. The program would be a landmark first step for a high-wealth suburb. Worthington City Council President David Robinson has rolled out the proposal. David, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Great to be here.
So it's modeled from a Columbus bond issue in 2019. Can you talk about the parallels here?
Well, the parallel, I think that the most essential parallel would be providing a means for a city in Worthington to use public funds through a bond issuance to incentivize the development or redevelopment of affordable housing in our city. Mayor Ginther, has been quite vocal about how the Central Ohio challenge can't be solved by Columbus alone, and has sought to enlist the support of suburban communities. And I believe that the Worthington public, when fully informed of what we're proposing, being the progressive-minded community that we are, would support such a proposal.
What is an affordable housing bond? How does it work?
Well, most simply stated, a municipality, Worthington, would issue bonds to create a pool of financing that could then be used to contribute to what they call in the business the finance stack for affordable housing projects. My understanding is that municipal funding typically accounts for a relatively small percentage, maybe 5 to 10%. Financing of projects, but it's all often a very important part. And the way I look at it is that in this way, Worthington could sort of multiply the impact of the amount of money that we contribute to projects. So basically, it's issuing bonds that create a pool of money that can then be used to incentivize projects.
Catherine Coffin, this is unusual or unique in Ohio at this point? That a suburb like Worthington is looking at something like this?
Yes, because typically these type of things, as we know, especially with what Columbus has done in 2019 and looking to do future, they have been doing this to provide this gap money to make these projects doable. So typically you don't have an entity or a municipality like Worthington do this. This could be a game changer for really providing what's needed and will attract great, very nice safe, affordable housing for Worthington.
Can I add to that, Anne?
Of course, David.
Thank you. You know, some folks have understandably asked, hey, $1.1 million, where'd that figure come from? And it was approximately proportional to the size of the Columbus initial program based on our different budget sizes. And then folks have also asked, is that really going to do much, $1 million? And I've spoken with Aaron Wasserman at Homeport, and he has said it would in fact be quite meaningful. He said that amount of money would probably contribute to 2 to 4 projects between 30 to 60 units each. And in a city the size of Worthington, you know, we're a built out community, roughly 15,000 persons, roughly 6,000 households, about 1,100 of them are multifamily. Those kinds of numbers are meaningful. So that's why we chose that size of a program. And I think it would be a very important first step for us in Worthington.
Yeah. Given that you're considering this, David Robinson, what are your thoughts about the impact of those provisions in House Bill 45 that we were talking about earlier, the one that would prevent a project from receiving both low-income housing tax credits and Ohio historic tax credits, and also the one that would allow auditors to assess affordable housing developments as if they're operating at a market rate pricing?
Well, I think you can imagine, I don't think they're helpful to the mission and the need at hand. So I regret that they took that action.
A city like Worthington, particularly, is already very built out. You can drive around, and I can probably name the vacant lots around there myself from living there. Yeah. How much do you see this project, this bond pool being invested in existing structures that are redeveloped?
Well, my understanding is your next guest, John Edgar, is going to be able to speak, I think, directly to the opportunities for redevelopment. Mm-hmm. And I'm not intimately aware of the different financing factors, but my understanding is that new construction costs are particularly expensive nowadays. And again, for a community like Worthington, where we have over 1,100 multifamily units right now, a number of the larger developments having built many decades ago, I would think that redevelopment would be a real possibility and probably the most likely initial use of these funds. And I also think, you know, frankly, that would be very desirable for Worthingtonians. Existing projects could be, rehabbed, refurbished, enhanced, really creating a win-win where existing projects are really revitalized, benefiting the residents and as well as the community as a whole. So in some, redevelopment would be great. I think it's a real opportunity in Worthington.
It's said to be much greener too, a lot lower carbon footprint when you reuse existing structures versus building from the ground up.
That makes sense.
614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We're talking about the demand for affordable housing in the state of Ohio and across the country is not being met by appropriate housing stock. And I'm talking with, that's David Robinson. He's a Worthington City Council president and has put forth a plan, as I said earlier, to ask Worthington voters to approve a $1.1 million affordable housing bond issue next November. They're just mulling it at this point. It is a thought, though, and it would be unique at this point in the state of Ohio for a high-wealth suburb to go down this road. Also with us, Catherine Cawthon. She's president and CEO of the Ohio Capital Corporation for Housing. It's a nonprofit that connects affordable housing developers with investors and lenders. Catherine, I wanted to focus for a second on the people who need affordable housing. You said, you know, you made a big point in the last segment that it's not who people think.
Exactly.
So first of all, who do people think are living in these places?
Yeah, I think a lot of times people just assume they are folks that are not working. They're living on 100% government assistance. And you'd be surprised that while we do have folks that are on government assistance, in a lot of developments, we have folks that cannot find safe, affordable housing for their families. They may be a family of four. Both parents are working. They may have either entry-level jobs. They may have jobs at the grocery store. But then also you have teachers. When you look at starting pay for teachers or for our services, fire, police, city workers, things like that, we see a lot of our business folks that are more in the early stages of a career or work life living in these developments. You also see, and something that I have not mentioned, are seniors. So our seniors are living on, a restricted income. And we have provided affordable housing for seniors across the state that allows them to age in place. And it does, in the long term, take burden off of a lot of resources, because they do have safe, healthy, affordable housing. So I cannot forget to mention our seniors.
David Robinson.
Thank you. Thank you so much for asking that question, and Catherine for explaining to the listeners. I think this would be a very important part of our education process of the voters going into the November ballot, if we get it on the ballot then, because there are a lot of misconceptions about who would avail themselves of this housing. And when you speak about workforce housing, teachers, firefighters, other service workers in the community, it puts a very different, I think, image in the minds of folks. And I think it's really important pragmatically to explain to people how this would benefit the city, and that this is not only about, basic questions of human empathy and really affording people an opportunity to live in a place that gives them opportunities and a sense of dignity and so forth. But there's also the really very pragmatic side of this, and that is workforce population wanting to be in and near where they work in Worthington, and this would help to do that.
There's, there was a day when millionaires lived sort of cheek to jowl with the people who worked for them, the butcher down the street that supplied their meats and that kind of thing. We are very segregated now by income in the society. I wonder if either of you can speak to the benefits of desegregating people in that way.
If I may chime in initially, and Catherine, I'd love to hear what you have to say. But, when I think about the reason why affordable housing is a good idea in Worthington, I think first the individual level, the family level, and what that means to give individuals and families a sense of security and a sense of integrity. Secondly, I think about the benefits of the community, like workforce housing. But thirdly, I think about sort of the intangible benefit of how a community, unbeknownst to itself often, is actually diminished when there's monolithic housing that precludes a vibrant and diverse population. And so I think that's really the third way I look at this, is increasing affordable housing in Worthington would create for a more vibrant, interesting, and diverse place.
Another issue, and Catherine Cawthon, if you want to chime in on that score.
I couldn't have said it better, David. That's exactly spot on.
What about the issue that people, you mentioned the NIMBYs, the not in my backyarders. A lot of people, and this is certainly something we've heard in Worthington, it's going to bring down, I don't care who moves in there. I don't mind living near people who don't make as much money as me, la, 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 la. But it's going to bring down my property values. What about that argument, Catherine Cawthon?
We have seen that if affordable housing, if workforce housing is done correctly, most of the time, this housing cannot be distinguished, apart from market rate. So these are very high quality, and we do this on purpose. We want our residents to have high quality housing, but we also want our housing to last. because we do not want to be having to do extreme fixes and renovations in year 7 to 10. So when people drive by an affordable housing project, home development, whether it's single family, multifamily, a lot of times they can't even distinguish it. It adds to the community. A lot of times our developers work with the residents in a community to make sure that what they are developing does fit within the scheme, within the idea, within the growth opportunities and the ideals that a community want to see. And we've been very successful, you know, with that approach and including the existing residents of a town in the conversations.
Yeah, David Robinson.
Let me add some remarks. Maybe as the one elected official on this show, I can share my perspective here. Just frankly, this is a challenging and difficult issue because as an elected official, I have constituents that I was elected to represent their interests. And to varying degrees, some of my constituents are probably relatively satisfied with the way things are. And understandably, they've worked hard to earn what they have, to build and invest in the home they have and so forth. I respect that. But I also feel as an elected official, part of my job, maybe a big part of it, is to also provide them with ideas, information, policy ideas that I believe will make our community even better. And to do so by anticipating change and maybe even being the community that makes that change. So it's a both and. And I think the best way to do that is to craft policies where there are not winners and losers, but where everyone is a winner. And I think that the proposal I put forward would do that in Worthington. And so I'm hoping that if it makes it to the ballot, we can make a strong case to the public, they'll support it, and we can take things forward. But first things first, I've got work to do with my fellow council members to get them on board.
I was going to ask you, what are the next steps for your proposal?
Well, we've discussed this at council several times, and there's a sentiment on by a slight majority of them that they want to do further study first. And I'm all for that. If that is what it takes to give them the confidence that they need to move forward, I think we know enough right now about the essentials where we can responsibly and effectively act. And so my thinking is, let us proceed with this proposal concurrent with study. And that's exactly what I'm going to try to continue to do here.
David Robinson, thanks so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me on. It's been great speaking with you. Thank you.
You too. David Robinson is the Worthington City Council president. He has put forth to the Worthington City Council his plan to ask voters to approve a $1.1 million affordable housing bond issue in November. It would be a landmark first step for a high wealth suburb in Ohio. Coming up, we're going to hear about another project going on in Ohio that is addressing the unmet needs and the dearth of affordable housing in the Buckeye State. So stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about affordable housing this hour. Still with us is Catherine Cawthon. She's president and CEO of the Ohio Capital Corporation for Housing. That is a nonprofit that connects affordable housing developers with investors and lenders. Reverend John Edgar is former executive director of community development for All People, and he's now president of the Columbus Housing Enterprise. Welcome to the show.
Delighted to be with you, Ann. Thanks for the invitation.
So your new job is with a new organization created to purchase and run a Dublin area multi-unit housing development. How did this work?
Sure. So I am retired. I'm going to actually turn 70 in a few days. But in retirement, I was approached by two of the leading developers in Central Ohio, Bob Weiler and Don Kelly. And they wanted to make a bold statement about giving forward for the benefit of affordable housing in the community. And so working with them and some other folks, including Hal Keller, who used to run Ohio Capital Corporation for Housing, we created a nonprofit called Columbus Housing Enterprise, and its mission is to preserve existing housing to assure that it stays affordable. It's often referred to as naturally occurring affordable housing. The acronym becomes NOAA. And then the big picture, it is great to continue building additional affordable housing. And that's what, you know, in your previous segment was being talked about. That's what I've been doing over the last 20 years with Community Development for All People. However, we can't simply build enough housing to meet the demand if simultaneously some of our housing stock ceases to be affordable. And that is an increasing challenge across not only Central Ohio, but across the nation. We sometimes talk about this as the challenge of gentrification, and then people normally think about that as a single family home. You know, it was rented and it was once affordable and now it's been fixed up and the rents are doubled. And that is a challenge, particularly on the South Side where I've done a lot of work. There is a similar challenge, however, with entire apartment complexes being flipped. In other words, frequently an out-of-state buyer will come in, purchase an entire apartment complex, make, in some cases, very minor improvements, but then significantly increase the rents because of the demand. So the problem that we're addressing with Columbus Housing Enterprise is how to make certain as we add affordable units, we're not simultaneously losing the ones that are already here. So we began with an apartment complex called Copperleaf. It's in the city of Columbus, but in the Dublin School District. It has 108 units. They're two-bedroom townhouses. And the Kelly and Weiler families that owned that apartment complex agreed to sell it at basically half its value. We purchased it as a nonprofit, and we'll make certain the rents stay affordable for generations to come.
That is John Edgar, president of Columbus Housing Enterprise. It's a new nonprofit, as he explained, that works with private sector leaders to preserve affordable housing. Questions or comments, give us a call, 614-292-8513. Catherine Cawthon, as far as this puzzle that you put together and that's being put together by lots of different entities, how does this fit into that puzzle of affordable housing in the future?
Yep. When we talk about the development of affordable housing, a lot of folks point to some of the federal programs that we've been talking about, low-income housing tax credits. But we have to understand, even if we ask for increases in those tax credit buckets or allocations, there's only so much we can do. And as Reverend Edgar mentioned, there's been studies that show that we could lose as many units to market rate, affordable units to market rate, that we're putting on, you know, into the communities for affordable. So you can't make any progress in trying to take care of the gap. So with this kind of project and with the folks that, you know, the Weilers and the Kellys that understand and have actually been advocates for affordable housing for decades,
right,
them to do this is an example for others that we would love to see across not only Ohio, but the country.
And they came to you.
Yeah, that's right. They did. I'm really impressed with both of these individuals and their families. And this apartment complex was just appraised at $16 million. They sold it for $8 million, so it's an $8 million contribution. Mm-hmm. And it's just the first of a total of three of their apartment complexes. So by roughly the end of the year, we will have 640 units that are preserved. And it will be a philanthropic gift from those two families of roughly $50 million.
Yeah. Right. It's huge.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, and I think when I read about this, I think it was Mr. Weiler who said, you know, he was hoping to encourage and to inspire others like them.
Absolutely, Anne. In fact, that's part of what made it attractive to me to get involved even in retirement.
It's not just these three.
That's right. And so we have a number of very successful developers of housing in Central Ohio, and they're very familiar names, and they're good people. And Bob Weiler and Don Kelly, quite frankly, are trying to get out front and then in a positive way encourage some of their colleagues, some of whom are their friends, mm-hmm. to consider doing very similar things. It will make a world of difference as we tackle the challenge to truly expand the total number of units. Also, Catherine's group is the one that offered the financing for this deal. You know, so we were able to borrow the $8 million to buy this at very affordable rates, even when we're seeing
this
such
higher
challenges
rate period,
interest
yeah.
rates. And so Catherine and Ohio Capital Corporation for Housing and their CDFI, their lending agent, have been key players in this overall initiative as well.
Booth in Delaware County, you're on the air. Hi, Booth.
Hi. I'm a little reluctant to raise this issue because I think I may wind up sounding like a jerk, but I didn't catch the very beginning of your program. I tuned
in
late, so you may have already covered this, but my question is whether when we're trying to sell the idea of affordable housing to a wealthy suburb, is there or can there be a distinction made between affordable housing and subsidized housing? Because I think a lot of people are going to be a lot more amenable to affordable housing. But if it gets into subsidized housing, then they worry about people who don't know how to manage their money and don't know how to pay their bills and therefore create other social problems.
Yeah, I mean, I think a big one of those is transience and moving on and leaving the place like a hellhole and that kind of a thing. I mean, the tropes are pretty familiar. I don't think you sound like a jerk, Booth. By the way, I think you're asking a really good question. John Edgar, how do you approach those questions?
Sure. Well, one of the delightful things about what we're doing with Columbus Housing Enterprise, we're taking units that right now are affordable. These are high quality units. They were built in the late 1980s. They look very similar to townhouse complexes that are right around them. This is just off of Sawmill Road. Mm-hmm. And these are wonderful people that are there right now. And we anticipate the significant majority of the residents just continuing to stay. What we're trying to do is make certain that their rents don't go up at an inappropriate level.
Well, appropriate for the times we're in, yeah, but not inappropriately for them.
That's right.
Because they can't catch up.
And different tenants have been there at different times, and so there's some variation in rents. But basically right now, the rents average around $1,000 a month, and they are affordable to people whose income is a little bit below what's called 80% of the average. And so it's an important part of the market share, and it is comprised primarily of people who are working or have steady income. There are a few senior citizens, you know, that have pensions. But in general, these are working folks who just want a decent place to live and are glad that they're going to be able to stay where they are now and not get forced out by some other kind of factor.
Because every day we're hearing these stories about people who have been paying their bills, right, living in a place for years sometimes, getting all of a sudden the rental fee, you know, it's just jacked up. Catherine Coffin, what about that? And what about what Booth said? He's kind of apologizing in advance, but there are stories and there are experiences we've all had with quote unquote subsidized housing.
Absolutely. And I think education is a key, right? Understanding what a development, if it is brand new, what are the intentions of it, who are going to be the residents, and also, you know, just educating yourself on who is, what your city or town needs as well, and how can that add to it. But then also, you know, and he doesn't sound like a jerk, because these are things that we go around the state and educate people on because it's important to us. But Reverend Edgar is absolutely right. We need to be focusing our efforts on finding housing for folks that are already searching, but they're already being pushed out of some complexes. Now, we in the affordable housing arena, we do keep a very close eye on budgets, and the budgets with the increases, there's very much, most of the time, it's tied to specific increases in whether it's utilities and things like that. It's unfortunate, though, you see a lot of folks that aren't in a affordable unit that's in market rate, you're seeing being pushed out. There's really no controls over that. Mm-hmm.
Right. There's no rent control. Yeah. Right.
So we have to find ways to create or to provide some sort of housing similar to Copperleaf that provides that.
You know, we talked earlier in the program about House Bill 45. It was passed in the dark of night during the lame duck session. It does two things that people in your business, Catherine Coffin, are concerned with. It prevents a project from receiving both low-income housing tax credits and Ohio historic tax credits, and it allows auditors to assess affordable housing developments like Copperleaf, I would assume, to assess them as if they're operating at market rate. The governor has responded to criticism of House Bill 45 by saying he wants to enact a comprehensive approach to housing this year. What about that, Catherine Coffin? Do you have faith in that something could come about that will be addressed?
So when we found out that these were going to be in House Bill 45 in the draft, you know, we, the advocates, got together and we did a full court press on folks at the state house and the governor. And he has promised us that while he believes these needed to stay in, he would not do a line item veto. He has promised us that he is committed to affordable workforce housing solutions and make it a priority this year. He is convening a committee. We are going to know a lot of the folks that are going to be on the committee. It's going to be a subsection of folks that interested parties. It's not just practitioners like myself. It's going to be folks that are have concerns on both sides, mm-hmm. which is the best way to do it. We want to make sure that affordable housing and workforce housing is the key. We love the fact, and the governor is listening to the fact, that we can enjoy all these successes with Intel, Honda, you know, all these companies that are going to be bringing some great paying jobs. But if we don't have the housing, that's going to come to a halt. They won't come to Ohio if we can't
house them. Right.
Right. We can't house them. We are committed, and he's going to, he said he's going to be supporting an Ohio workforce housing tax credit that specifically works along with and really encourages workforce housing, and be able to actually make some strides in creating more than 2,500 new units annually, over 14,000 during a 6-year period. And that also brings jobs to the area. So he has shown us a commitment to that.
Yeah, John Edgar, the thoughts about having kind of this larger approach.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, we need a comprehensive approach. What Columbus Housing Enterprise is doing is just like one more tool in the toolbox. And I think I would close by just the reminder that housing is the primary social determinant of health. The quality of life for people depends on having safe, decent housing. And so as a community, we owe it to one another to work on multiple solutions. I commend the governor for saying he's going to tackle some of this. Like all of us, it's what we do. It's not just what we say. But together, we can create a community where there's a good place for everybody to call home.
That's Reverend John Edgar. He's president of Columbus Housing Enterprise, a nonprofit that works with private sector leaders to preserve affordable housing. And also, Catherine Cawthon, thanks so much for your time today. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you.
Catherine Cawthon is president and CEO of the Ohio Capital Corporation for Housing, a nonprofit that connects affordable housing developers with investors and lenders. Thanks to the Allside staff, senior producer Marcus Charleston, assistant producer Bobby Gerberick, our interns Chantel Brown, Chris Corcoran, Nicole Nowicki, and Ethan Miller. This is Allside with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.